Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's Greg Hahn, President and Chief Investment Officer from Winthrop Capital Management, world headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. With me in the studio is Amy Anderson, production coordinator. Good morning, Amy. And Adam Coons.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Doing well.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Went to the Carmel Car Show.
That's pretty cool.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. I can't. Yeah, that's actually pretty new, isn't it, Reese? I mean, it's that
few
whole
years,
event.
Yeah. It's a big one.
So catching up with Naples. What's the one in Monterey? The one on the West Coast?
Oh.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. I can't think of the name of it.
So you're going to trade your car in?
I want to after that.
All right. We got a few things to cover. We're going to cover our top five stocks for the remainder of the year. But before we do that, we want to hit on this issue with the Fed. So monetary policy, just for a context of these markets right now, monetary policy provides fuel for capital markets, and it helps to accelerate private credit expansion. It helps to provide liquidity to the markets and ultimately helps asset valuations move higher. You mix that with fiscal policy, and you've got even stronger cocktail of fuel for the economy, and that's really what we've got right now. The result is that the S&P 500 trades at something close to, 33 times earnings?
Yep.
So it's very, very high multiples by historic measures. But the question then is, how long does the Fed keep this in place? Now, the Fed started this program of aggressive monetary policy following the financial crisis in 2008 and went through a number of programs called quantitative easing, QE1, QE2, and QE3. My kids think that's the Queen Elizabeth, but it's really quantitative easing. I tell them that's not the British ship. So we're on QE4. But when you look back at what happened during following the financial crisis, the Fed grew its balance sheet to over $4.5 trillion by buying bonds in the open market. And then it tried to dismantle that, and it started to take steps to, first it stopped the bond buying program, and then it started to move interest rates higher by adjusting Fed funds, and then tried to actually move part of the portfolio off back into the marketplace. And it just was getting going on that when the pandemic hit. So arguably, the Fed has never unwound its programs, even though it tried through a series of rising interest rates from 2016 to culminated in 2019, very slowly. Now, so here's where we're at. We're at the balance sheet's $8 trillion. And in the, which is my favorite Fed meeting. I know everyone listening has their own favorite Fed meeting, but mine's Jackson Hole. I love the scenery. So we've got this. So the Chairman Powell basically said, we're going to start this process. And this is like, for all of us listening in investing, this is, for a context, this is the second time around where we said, okay, the Fed's going to try to untangle itself from the capital markets. So here we go. The Fed has basically said, we're going to start, it's called a taper. We're going to start to try to taper, which is reduce the bond buying program. And our guess was that they would actually do this before the end of the year, and I think that is the signal. And it's going to start with a reduction, which eventually will lead to the elimination of the bond purchase program. But the actual increase in interest rates is still probably a few years out. The market took that very well this last week and rallied once again to all-time highs. And so this is, the Fed's done a remarkable job of helping to manage expectations for investors, trying to balance this whole thing of, we're going to start to reduce support, but we don't want to freak the market out. Yeah. And that's what the taper tantrum was all about back in 2013, when Bernanke said, we're going to start to reduce support, and the market just discounted that. Interest rates went high, and the market tripped in 2013 until it really understood this is going to take a long time. But that's really meant as a context for where we're at. We're still fully invested, yep. Although we're building defense into portfolios. We think the Fed they're going to risk a policy mistake, in terms of just so much liquidity into the market at a time when the economy is still growing, and we could argue whether it really needs the support or not. But that's kind of where we're at right now. So it's going to be an interesting remainder of the year, but I think that still is the focus right now, is the Fed. And then the wild card, obviously, is the COVID variant, what that'll do to the economy. So, Adam, thoughts on your end?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like you said, I think it shows that the Fed has done a good job of getting the market ready for this, because you even saw interest rates decline after the meeting pretty sharply, 5 basis points across the curve. So, you know, it's basically that the market was anticipating,
yeah,
or just expecting the potential that they could move more aggressively, but the fact that they're not moving that aggressively, I think, just let equity markets take off again and rates continue their decline.
Yeah, what's the S&P is up over 18%
yeah,
this year. It's
yeah,
just remarkable. And it's all really, I mean, the part of that's the recovery, and we still haven't fully recovered in the economy. There's still parts of the economy that are
absolutely
impaired. But to have that type of growth is just stunning, given the shape that the economy is in. And it just shows the support that the central bank has provided has really helped investors. But the question then is, now what? We don't expect to see a collapse in the market. That's our base case is that we're seeing slower growth and lower expected returns on financial assets. And that's going to be the real conundrum, is that the returns we've gotten in stocks the last 4 years are just not
ridiculous.
You can't keep going. So then where do investors put their money? And that's where we're here to help. That's a longer discussion.
It is, but obviously a tough place to be. And obviously last week we started talking about the fixed income portion of our model portfolios. And, you know, we started talking about China and whether, you know, adding China bonds is something we want to look at. Obviously very preliminary discussions there, but relative to corporates, I mean, a 10-year Chinese government bond yields 3% versus a single A corporate yielding 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously volatility and a lot of other issues around that, but it's just really tough to find income, which was the theme we were talking about last week. How do you put income into a portfolio? And it's just possible, seemingly.
Yeah. Well, before we talk about stocks, we want to mention a few losses this last week. So in the world we follow, Jerry Harkness passed away. Jerry was a basketball player for Loyola. Took them to the NCAAs, that version of the NCAAs, their championship, playing for Loyola, and then eventually played for the Pacers back when the Pacers were an ABA team.
Okay.
But a local legend, and he used to hang, I know he hung around Woodruff Place with my aunt and uncle. So, but we also lost Charlie Watts,
yeah,
the drummer for the Rolling Stones, and Ed Asner. If you're a Mary Tyler Moore fan, Amy, I know you are,
mm-hmm.
That was Charlie Watts was an amazing drummer.
Yeah.
You're a drummer.
I am a drummer.
So, Rolling Stones?
I like the Rolling Stones. It wasn't a big icon for me, but Neil Peart was my, I know. As a kid, he was the drummer what do you have, 50 different pieces of his drum set?
Well, I guess Charlie Watts would go out. Everyone, while the Rolling Stones were out partying all night long, Charlie Watts would go to bed.
That was always a rumor.
Yep. Well, all right. Let's talk about stocks.
Let's do it.
You want to kick it off?
I do. So first on my list, I got PayPal. In a world where technology kind of starts to be the entire list of top stocks, I got a couple here that are not technically tech. So PayPal, I think as you look at just kind of how the world is shifting, it's amazing how there still are so many cash payments. And so that's what's led PayPal to growing at the rate that it has. It's now only 54% of the market share, with the second competitor, which is Stripe, is only 19%. So really dominating that industry. And then they have Venmo, which is really one of the biggest growth drivers for PayPal. When you look at, you know, that person-to-person transaction just continues to pick up.
And they started to add a fee to that, right?
They did. So they've added some different fees, and a lot of it has to do with kind of your consumer experience, how quickly you want the funds and that sort of thing. In addition, both PayPal and Venmo have begun to accept Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Okay.
But you know, the positive of that is that they're accepting that as a transaction type vehicle, but they're not taking on the risk of it. So it's just one more avenue for people to transact. So it gives them more and more growth. The stock is up 20% this year, trading at $278 a share. But you know, we see earnings growth continuing to be above 20%. Transactions this last quarter were, they added 11.4 million in new accounts. So just overall a really strong company just in the transaction, we're seeing more and more transactions happening. So,
and there's a number, this is one of our themes this year, is this whole digital transaction space. There's a number of different ways to play this. You can do this through the Visa, MasterCard, Discover, but also you can look at Square.
Sure.
But we chose PayPal as our place, and Venmo was a big piece of that.
It was, yeah.
So,
and obviously Venmo saw some benefits from COVID because, well, once again, just the way people were, you know, transferring money to one another just began to shift, and that's not changing.
Yeah. One of the ones that I have is Microsoft, and I know that this is going to be, you know, like, oh, well, you brought this up every every call.
It's working.
But what you'll see here, or you'll hear, excuse me, you won't see because we're actually recording this. So it's Monday morning, is a theme. And the theme is really about the business model, which these business models can capture recurring revenue. And they're so powerful, and that's one of the reasons why these companies have been so successful, is it doesn't require them to sell bagels out of a door and to have someone open it up at 8 in the morning and close it at 6 at night. These are recurring revenues that exist 24/7 around the globe. And Microsoft is one of those, and it operates in really three businesses. Their business process segment, the cloud, and then their personal computing segment. The cloud business is one of their fastest growing business, and that's Azure is the lead there. But they've shifted their products, which is basically Outlook and the corporate suite, the Excel and Word. They've done that now successfully onto a subscription basis, so you don't have to buy the diskettes to install onto your computer anymore. It's all done through a subscription. And that represents that recurring revenue. As a result, the company operates at 68.9% gross operating margins and 36.5% net operating margins. It's just amazing. But here's what's amazing to us. At $300 a share, it trades at 35.2 times earnings. And guess what the S&P 500 trades at? You know, it's really trading in line with the S&P right now. So we think even at it's a $2.2 trillion company, it's massive company, but its growth rate, its opportunity to continue to grow globally with its product suite is there. And the new products coming along, I think there's a couple in there that are really going to be interesting.
I think cross-selling seems to be a really strong place for Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, they've got one product, Adam, where you can give a speech. It can record the speech, and then it'll translate it into another language with perfect diction.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing what you can do for global companies. So that's been a long time holding for us, and it's still, there's no reason from our standpoint, especially with the opportunities that still exist in the cloud, and it's one of the top three competitors in the cloud space.
Number two right now.
Yep. So Microsoft, back to you.
So back to the China theme, Tencent. And obviously, this is one that brings a little bit more volatility to any list. But when you look at a company that has, as you just said, a really strong business model, reoccurring revenue, where just it's just a money machine overnight. You've got basically with Tencent, you've got a combination of Google, Amazon, and Facebook all rolled into one. But they do online gaming, music, video, fintech, social media. And then just overall consumer sales. Revenue has been increasing 20% year over year for the past 3 years, despite COVID and some challenges in China. Operating margins are above 25%. And as you said, valuation is very cheap at 20 times earnings. So, you know, relative to US-based companies with similar growth and similar growth opportunities, it really is cheap. And it's cheap for a reason, right? It's down 40% this year.
Yeah.
And that's really on the heels of this increased regulation from China. But I think kind of what we're in our shop, what we're saying is that China's, these companies are too important to China and the economic growth that they're trying to get across the globe. And ultimately, they're not going to choke these companies off just for the sake of the party.
And so this is one of those stocks where you buy it and then you just don't look at it and you wake up 5 years later and you just don't want to look at it.
There will be volatility.
Right. The next one I have is Alphabet, which is Google.
Yep.
It operates in two business segments, which is really Google, and then what's called the Other Bets.
Right.
It's a quirky company, but they are obviously internet search is a big part of their business, but they operate Android, Chrome, Google Cloud, Google Maps,
YouTube.
And YouTube. Thank you. Yeah. And so that's really the surprise. I mean, the yeah. growth that they've done a really good job after acquiring YouTube of starting to monetize that business.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this is a company, and I love talking about margins, 53% gross margins, 22.5% net operating margins. The stock trades, it's a $2,992 price, so let's call it $3,000, at $100 a share in earnings next year, which I think is conservative. It trades at about 30 times earnings. So that's actually a discount to the S&P right now. So now it's got some issues, right, with you're going to read about antitrust and
always.
And they settled, I think they settled with Europe.
They did, yeah.
But that's going to be a continued theme. And we don't consider that a major impediment to their business model.
Right.
So right now it's still on our top five list.
And I'll wrap it up with a kind of a little bit of a COVID-based, but outside of the tech world, Pfizer. So obviously we all know that they've developed a strong vaccine, and we're going to see some benefits to revenue over the near term with the fact that we're going to have to add booster shots. So that's going to continue to increase their revenue above expectations. Even just this last quarter, we saw a raise to their revenue expectations by $15 billion. So we're looking at $34 billion coming from just the vaccine. But when you peel back that layer and say, was that all they've got? That they don't. Last quarter, all other segments grew by 10%. They have a really strong pipeline. So they've really kind of reinvented themselves here over the past couple of years. So they've got not only the vaccine, but they've got a strong pipeline. And then when you look at valuation, so you got Johnson & Johnson and Merck trading at 14 and 18 times revenue or earnings respectively. Pfizer, despite being a very strong vaccine player, is trading only at 11 times earnings. So you've got a very, you're talking about the S&P trading at 35. You've got a very, very cheap company here. So just a lot of growth opportunities, but on top of that, a good valuation play as well.
Yeah, that's a interesting play, right? So pharma has not really been, from a growth standpoint, it's kind of hit or miss.
It is, but to diversify away from all of these big tech names that have kind of created some concentration risk.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's it for today. That's thank you guys for listening, and then we'll talk to you through the week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2021, Winthrop Capital Management.